Hello and welcome to the Pit Stop Podcast. I'm Jordan Dyler Coltman. Tyler is not with us. Unfortunately, we had a little bit of a scheduling issue this week, but he will be back for our next race following the Grand Prix in Japan at Suzuka. And I'm sure he has lots of feelings and lots of opinions on what transpired this week at Albert Park in Australia. But as I say, unable to join us this week. So you've got me flying solo here. And you know what? It's kind of fitting that it's just me, because much like Williams, who witnessed one driver make it to the grid come Sunday, you know, sometimes your best laid plans don't always come to fruition. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more on this episode of the Pit Stop Podcast. Really quickly before we get started, as always, please, if you enjoy this show, if you're a fan of Formula One, if you're a fan of our show, share it with some friends, hit subscribe. Helps us grow, helps us do all those things. It'd be fantastic. All right, let's get to it. So the Australian Grand Prix, we talked a lot leading into this race about how, you know, we'd obviously seen the dominance of Red Bull all of last season. We saw the dominance of Red Bull starting the season through the first two races. And then we get here, and lo and behold, we get drama. So again, before we even got to the race itself, we had drama. Williams sees Albon go into the wall during practice, damages his car to the point of no return, literally holes in the chassis. And it exposed not only the inside of the chassis, but equally it exposed some flaws in the current structure of that team and that organization. James Vowles, who's come over from Mercedes a year or so ago now, made it very clear from the beginning that he had been able to identify some real structural problems with how that organization had been run. You know, one of the most iconic and legendary organizations on the grid, one of the last true independent teams from a bygone era, but they were lagging behind infrastructure-wise, preparation-wise, resource-wise, and they are still suffering from trying to dig themselves out of that disadvantage. And it was exposed, as I say, this race, because they did not have a spare chassis. So when the car was not repairable during the weekend, they were forced to make a very difficult decision, and they did so. They sidelined Logan Sargeant, giving preferential treatment to their lead driver, Alex Albon. And if there was ever any question at Williams who number one was, it is very, very, very clear now, but that shouldn't have surprised anyone. He's been the one who's gotten them results recently. He's the more experienced driver and all of that. But still, I'm sure a very difficult conversation for James Vowles to have with Logan Sargeant, a young driver who every single race matters to, because he is fighting for his life as a driver in this sport, trying to prove himself after a difficult rookie year last year. But lo and behold, we get 19 cars to the grid. The other interesting storyline, I mean, there's several interesting storylines, but the other one I'm going to touch on today coming out of qualifying is that we saw the beginnings of what was going to be an absolutely brutal weekend for Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton not making it out of Q2, did not make it into Q3. And that should have been the omen that bad things were going to be in store for the rest of the week, weekend. On the other side of it, Verstappen, very good qualifying, manages pole. And we see him and then the two Ferraris lining up there. But here's the interesting thing about Albert Park. In the history of this racetrack, the cars that start 1, 2, 3 on the grid coming out of qualifying have never finished on the podium 1, 2, 3. So we knew something had to give, and it turned out to be exactly the case. Let's jump to the race really quickly. It starts, and immediately we know there's a problem with that Red Bull. It got out to a decent start, decent first two or three turns, but something wasn't quite right. Radio messages immediately coming in saying that Max felt something was off with the back end of the car. We could see he was struggling for grip. And equally, Carlos Sainz made the overtake look incredibly easy, more easy than any overtake Max Verstappen has had to compete with in several years. And then immediately after that, Max Verstappen and that Red Bull that was so consistent last season starts tumbling down the order, and it becomes very quick, it becomes evident very quickly that it is terminal. And then it became very evident that it could actually be a more serious problem than just being a do not finish. He had to get to the pit because that car was smoking. There was some serious problems at the back end of it as he entered the pit lane you could actually see the brake explode. And he managed to limp home, get out of the car, clearly frustrated, disappointed, upset. And just like that, any hopes of a perfect season or any hopes of a stringing together another, you know, epic podium streak was over and done with. And it meant the field was wide open. Max Verstappen, who has been atop the table for so long, not a factor, not competing. And I won't lie to you, I jumped for joy. I was excited. I'm sure a lot of people were. I know that we have talked ad nauseum on the show about the Max Verstappen fatigue that I think has set in, especially for newer fans of this sport. And I think this weekend was a breath of fresh air for those who have been looking for something a little different. It gave hope to the idea that maybe we could get back to a place where we have multiple drivers, multiple constructors competing at the top of the table. I would say we might be a bit premature in making this a habit. However, you know, the first step towards creating a trend is, you know, the first of anything. And this was the first time we have seen Max Verstappen's car not finish in a very long time. And it was joyous. So what did that obviously mean? It opened the door up for Sainz. It opened the door up for Ferrari, who had a great weekend leading up to that point. Now, the storyline, obviously, with Sainz that cannot go untold is the fact that Carlos Sainz missed the last Grand Prix. We talked a lot about Behrman, who was in his seat in Saudi Arabia at Jeddah, but he was not in the seat because he had had some serious issues with his appendix, to the point of which literally had to have surgery for an appendectomy, and was still nursing the scar, the wound, I guess. I mean, it's serious abdominal surgery, only 2 weeks removed from that, and quite gingerly in and out of the car all weekend. And yet once in the car, looked incredibly comfortable, looked incredibly poised. He put a masterclass on, demonstrating that he went in the right vehicle, is capable of being an elite driver. And again, being the one man, the odd man out at this point, knowing that Lewis has already taken his seat for next season, there's a lot on the line for Carlos Sainz this season to demonstrate that he deserves one of those other seats that may be available at a top team, i.e. Mercedes, maybe Red Bull. And so definitely could not have gone better for him. Equally, Charles Leclerc finishing second makes it a 1-2 for Ferrari. We have not seen that in a very long time. And it sets that team up for great success. Following behind, the other interesting one, we have clearly seen one of the teams with an M leading their constructor title become the clear number three. And it isn't Mercedes, it is McLaren. Lando Norris 3, Oscar Piastri 4, and they were very in control, not with the pace necessary to catch and compete with the Ferraris, but in control the whole way through. Sergio Perez made up some great positions to get to 5. And then we'll talk about what happened behind him, because that's a later storyline. But before we get too far into the race itself as well, Lewis Hamilton is the next victim of some reliability issues. He has to retire. So as I said, not able to make it out of Q3, working from the middle of the pack at the start of this race. And then he had an engine issue. It was interesting because you watched the onboard for it and it wasn't a violent failure, and yet it was violent enough that like you could see the car shudder and see and you could hear that it was an internal failure. So definitely a problem there. Luckily, he was also able to kind of get that car to a runoff area. We didn't need a red flag at that point or anything. We got a virtual safety car, which certainly benefited a couple teams looking for those late pit stops. But that was sort of, those were the two big ones. I mean, when you have both Lewis and Max out of a race, historically, most recently, the two most dominant drivers. And now all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be some other opportunities for some drivers to get some screen time and some of that there. Let's really quickly run through some of the other storylines. As I say, Albon not able to get points. So that gamble by Williams doesn't pay off for them, unfortunately. Haas, definitely, truly a midfield team this year, more so I think than even Tyler or I expected. They seem to really have found a groove. They got points again, finishing 9 and 10 respectively. So good on Haas to continue to demonstrate. Really impressed by Yuki Tsunoda in that V carb, getting some good points for that team and a very you know, if not, you know, electrifying or exciting race, a consistent race, a strong race, put his car in a position to win. And you couldn't find his teammate, nowhere to be found, way down at the bottom of the table. So for Yuki, who again is trying to impress at Red Bull, definitely a good weekend for him, leading into his home Grand Prix next up in Japan. So, you know, hopefully a little run of form for him. And then the other one, obviously, is this incident near the end of the race that led to the second Mercedes DNF and the serious rollover for George following Alonso near the end of the race. So I believe it was actually on his final lap behind Alonso that this incident occurred. In the moment, it did seem like a very odd racing incident because there was no contact. There was no immediate suggestion that there had been some type of infraction. And yet George completely lost the vehicle, ends up in the runoff gravel area, hits the wall, comes back onto the track. Both of his left side wheels are dislodged. They're tethered in this new safety regulations we're currently seeing. So they didn't go flying off like you have seen in previous years, which is good, but it caused the car to kind of get caught up on them. It was like, you know, if you remember in middle school or something, where some kid would sneak under another kid's desk and like tie their shoes together. And then the poor kid would get up and try to walk away and trip on themselves. That's what it looked like. It literally just got tripped up on itself. He ended up like 90 degrees on the side of the car in the middle of the track, which was incredibly scary, I know, for him. And we'll go to his radio call later. It features in a different part of the show, but definitely an interesting one, because I think under other circumstances, we would have seen a red flag. It was just such a dangerous place coming out of sort of an S curve area where you have two turns and a bit of a blind corner coming into where his car was sort of, you know, stranded, beached, marooned, whatever the words you want to use for it were. But he was in a vulnerable position, and I think had there been more than a half lap left for most of the field, it probably would have indicated a red flag. So there's some question marks there around whether or not, you know, the stewards made the right decision to continue. Obviously they get away with it because there was luckily, mercifully, no serious incident, but definitely a questionable one. They wanted the race to finish, I guess, under some type of racing condition, so they went with the virtual safety car. But definitely some conversations that need to be had. Then we find out post-race, as I said, that Alonso's under investigation for causing an incident. And that's where it became clear that there was a brake check that seemed to have occurred at one of those corners. When you compare how he had been racing those corners on previous laps, being pursued by George, who had closed in on him, there was clearly a difference in his braking position there. So he was using that wily old veteran mind of his to try to shake the toe, but it caused George to have to make a last second decision that caused him to lose control of the vehicle. And then, you know, we saw the results of it. So Fernando's penalized post-race and drops down to eighth as a result. So, you know, a tough pill to swallow for him, but probably the right decision in the end. But yeah, definitely a race where, you know, we talk on this show all the time about like high event. It was certainly high event, all weekend, high event, lots to talk about, lots to get into, and lots that we'll look back, I think, on this race throughout the rest of the season. And I think it might be a touch point for a couple different storylines, the beginning point of some of those pieces, either, you know, the low point for Mercedes, if they can turn it around, or the beginning of what could be a very long and difficult season for them. Equally, you know, this could be the beginning of the turn where we see Ferrari competing with Max and competing with Red Bull on a more consistent basis, which I think we would all, as fans of the sport, you know, welcome. But equally, you know, how does the next chapter of the story now unfold for Red Bull, who's seen their first real struggle with reliability, which again, not something they have had to worry about whatsoever in the last calendar year, or beyond that even. So lots to dig into, and stuff that will, I think, will continue to, you know, come up as we move through the season. Let's hand out some hardware here. First off, driver of the day, easy one, Carlos Sainz. Lando Norris, I think, made the joke post race about maybe every driver on the grid is going to start asking for his appendix to be removed if this is how great a result you get as a turnaround. But, you know, we've seen a lot of good stories in the history of sports around athletes fighting through adversity, fighting through illness, fighting through injury, whatever. I mean, I think of the flu game and things like that, where you've got, you know, one of the most iconic athletes of all time, and they sort of just put this, they put everything else aside, things that would just lay, you know, you, me, and average people out for a day or two to recover from. I mean, if I had my appendix out, I probably wouldn't work for, you know, three or four, well, maybe, I don't know, it depends how long, a couple of weeks at least. You know, I wouldn't be at full capacity. I certainly wouldn't be wanting to get inside of an F1 car and taking on that physical G force on the body. And yet, you know, he was ready to go, jumped right in. And as I say, drove phenomenally well. It was one of the more interesting post-race celebrations we've seen in recent years. Usually those drivers are springing out of that car and jumping up and down, and he kind of gingerly slid down the side, and you could definitely tell he was not comfortable. So again, additional credit to him for that. Driver of the day, our not so driver of the day. For me, this one's a bit trickier, because like part of me wants to say, you know, well, you know, it was a tough outing for Max, but you can't really blame Max. It was a car failure. Equally, Lewis, disappointing, definitely not what they wanted. That's frustrating. For me, it's a toss up. It's either got to be George for ending up in the wall and losing all of what was left on the table for Mercedes, or, you know, you could argue it's Alonso, because Alonso ends up making a very bad decision late in a race, costs not only himself points by taking on that penalty, but, you know, could have really seriously injured another driver. So for me, Alonso is our not so driver of the day. Overtake of the race. This one's the Perez move on George Russell earlier in the race. He had him for a couple laps. George was doing his best to defend, wasn't able to hold on to the end. It was a good pass by Perez. And then our radio call of the race. And this one we actually have audio for. This is interesting. Traditionally, this we hand this award out in almost a comical way. We try to find like kind of a funny example of a radio call. For me, this one's not comical at all, but it is the most important and maybe probably the radio call that will be the most lasting from this race. Of course, I'm talking about George Russell when he was on his side and the incident that we talked about a second ago with Alonso.
Red flag, red flag, red flag. I'm in the middle of a track. Red flag, red flag.
Red flag, you're strong.
Red, 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 red. I'm in the middle. Red.
So that's a desperate George Russell calling in, begging for a red flag. He was absolutely terrified. As I say, usually the radio call the race, we give to something sort of comical, but I think that for me, that's the haunting sound that'll remain from the end of this race on top of everything else. An honorable mention to Carlos Sainz radio calls at the end of the race, where he also asked for Charles Leclerc to come up, and they had the two Ferraris finish very close to each other as an extra little bit of celebration for the Tifosi after such a fantastic weekend for Ferrari. But George Russell gets that one. Also, interesting one here. So I mentioned the weird, interesting history around the top three grid placements, never finishing 1, 2, 3 on Grand Prix Sunday. Equally, whenever Carlos Sainz has won a race, George Russell has always DNF'd. So if I'm Carlos Sainz, you got to hope occasionally there's a bit more challenges over there for Mercedes, because you need George to not end up finishing the race in order to win, or you've got to break that streak. And I think Carlos Sainz probably can break that streak this week. Okay, that's a very rushed, admittedly, but it's hard when you don't have a buddy to talk through. Maybe next week after Japan, we'll get Tyler's thoughts on this race too, because I'm sure that he has many of them. He joked a couple weeks ago, I think, about how, like, you know, he often doesn't watch the races live. And how he may have, he knew that the weekend that Max didn't finish on top, it would be spoiled. And I think that was probably the case this weekend, because I'm sure there was a lot of attention online and all of the headlines and all of those kind of things. It probably would have been hard to avoid for Tyler, but we'll ask him about that next week when he's here. All right. That is that piece of that.
Hey, podcast listeners, my name is Larice Campbell, and along with my co-host, former Olympic bobsledder, Alicia Olson, I am so excited to introduce you to the Mother Pucker Podcast. Our brand new show launches this Wednesday, October 18th, and if you love the Oilers like we do, you are going to love our show. It's just two gals who aren't afraid to drop the gloves and throw some hot takes about the boys in blue and orange. Whether you're a massive hockey fan like us or just looking for some new voices talking about the Oilers' blue line, or lack thereof, we promise the show is for you. So subscribe now and tell your friends. It's time for the Mother Pucker Podcast.
It's time for mail.
Okay, so for box this week, this one is a very pressing question. It literally came in after the race this weekend, but because of the storylines or whatever around this week, I thought it was perfect and fitting, and it wouldn't have made any sense later on, so we've got to ask it. So Sarah asks, has there ever been an incident similar to what happened this weekend with Williams where one driver has had to give up his car for another? So I did a little digging on this, and I apologize to the, you know, F1 historians who probably can dig up a few more examples of this than what I was able to on kind of a tertiary look. But here, hopefully, this is a satisfactory answer for you, Sarah. Yes is the first answer. Apparently, this was actually quite common in the early years of Formula One when there was a much greater lack of reliability, and the teams would often not be able to even get both cars, you know, race ready. And so the priority would always go to the team leader. But there's a specific example with some names you may recognize that I thought was an important one to mention. 1955 Mercedes Juan Manuel Fangio, who you may recognize, the world champion name, gave up his car to teammate Stirling Moss, allowing him to win his home Grand Prix at Antrim in England. So this is almost a carbon copy example where Moss's car was damaged. Fangio, being the second driver, relinquished his car and allowed Moss to win. So there's a good example for you. So yes, not unprecedented, certainly not common. And I don't think I certainly couldn't find a more recent example at first glance. But hey, if you're out there and you know of another example of this happening more recently, let me know about it. Put it in our messages. Also, if you'd like to ask us a question, you can do so at any time. Email us at pitstop@ordinarypodcasts.com, or you can send us a direct message on Instagram. Okay. I don't really have any specific news outside of this one specifically. We also obviously didn't do Tyler's power rankings because Tyler's not here, and I don't want to steal his segment. So instead, we're going to jump right ahead to a race preview. I am stealing that part, which is also kind of his segment, but that's okay. Please forgive me, Tyler, as I muddle through this race preview. We are going to Japan. This is the Suzuka International Racing Course. It was established in 1987. It's a 53-lap race. The lap record is a minute 30.9. Lewis Hamilton holds that from 2019. This is one of the more interesting circuits, in my opinion, on the you know, calendar. One DRS zone, some really fun S curves, a great long straightaway from the start finish area, and it has a crossover, which is always fun when you've got part of the racetrack going underneath another part of the racetrack. As I said, it goes April 5, 6, and 7. Another good racing weekend for fans who like to watch it live. No offense, Tyler, because we're getting some primetime North American starts for these events. 11 p.m. for qualifying on April 5th, and then a 10 p.m. race on April 6th. So you stay up a little late on the weekend. You can enjoy it, but it should be really exciting. And it will, you know, hopefully... following it, we'll have Tyler back and we'll have a bit more to talk about. On behalf of Tyler, on behalf of the Ordinary Podcasting Network, and on behalf of the Pit Stop Podcast, I'm Jordan Deller-Coltman. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Pit Stop Podcast is a presentation of the Ordinary Podcasting Network. Thanks for listening. The Ordinary Podcasting Network wishes to acknowledge that the lands on which our conversations take place include
Treaty 6 territory, the traditional meeting ground and home for many indigenous peoples, including the Cree, Dene, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, and the Nakota Sioux peoples, as well as the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations.
We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit, whose footsteps have marked these lands for generations. And we extend our appreciation for the opportunity to live, create, and share stories on these territories.
The Ordinary Podcasting Network intends to engage in conversations and dialogue which acknowledge that reconciliation is not a destination, but a journey, and that we remain committed to practicing our craft in a decolonized space.